Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, we did. We started to burn many, many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman back for another Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. We've got a great guest today, my good buddy, co-conspirator, the great Bob Fitrate. Bob, you with us?
I'm here, Harvey.
Talking to us from frozen Columbus, Ohio. Last week, I had the great opportunity to do the show from a beautiful yoga studio with a great echo overlooking the Florida Bay. Today, I'm in sunny Los Angeles visiting my grandson, and it's nice and warm in the daytime and really cold at night. That's what you get for being in the desert. Bob and I are going to talk about many things today. The first half hour, we're going to discuss election protection, election theft, and the insane and very destructive governor of Ohio, John Kasich, who may very well be a major contender for the Republican presidential nomination in 2016. He's got reelected in 2014, but nonetheless, what he's been doing, he's in that crowd of Republican governors, extreme right-wing Republican governors, with Scott Walker in Wisconsin, Rick Snyder in Michigan, Rick Scott in Florida, the guy in Pennsylvania, and a few other, the Tea Party-inspired governors, although I guess, Bob, many people would consider John Kasich kind of moderate, given some of the things he's done. But we'll talk about that. We're also going to talk about election theft. And most important, I think I'm going to start with this, talk about the murder of, the apparent murder, I guess. It's not established as a murder in the court system, of Mike Connell, who was the inside man in the middle on the theft of the 2004 election by George W. Bush. In the second half hour, after a break at 30, Bob and I will discuss fracking and other environmental issues in Ohio and elsewhere that are destroying our environment. So let's get right down to it. Bob, you are the man when it comes to election protection, election theft. You and I broke most of the major stories coming out of Ohio in 2004 on the theft of the 2004 election. Mm-hmm. You were an election observer in the 1980s. Was it in Nicaragua or El Salvador?
El Salvador, in 1994.
94, okay. And how's your Spanish?
muy bueno.
Yeah. All right.
Enough to get around and order a few things.
Yeah. Having seen election theft and so much else in El Salvador, what do you think of what happened in Ohio? And tell us a bit about Michael Connell, please.
Well, 2004 in Ohio would not have passed any standard set by the international election observer community or the United Nations. It wouldn't have been counted as a free and fair election, primarily because it wasn't transparent. Essentially, you had private contractors, private partisan contractors in Ohio running the election at the highest levels. So, and by that, again, they're essentially writing the software codes, designing the system on how to count and report the vote. And just to remind your listeners, Mike Connell, the man who died on December 19th, 5 years ago, was a vehement right-to-lifer with the Catholic Church. That was his great passion. He had a company called GovTech. GovTech was involved in running the Republican National Committee website, Swift Voters for Truth. He designed, you know, most of the systems used by the Republican Party, so GovTech. He also then creates another company called GovTech is his government company. The company that's doing the Republican work is called New Media. So under New Media, he's the most partisan IT guy in America, doing Swift Voters for Truth, doing Karl Rove's email out of the White House, the one that turned up with nearly 20 million emails missing and three separate scandals. On the other hand, he's also selling himself, even though it's his wife that nominally owns the company, as GovTech, just a nonpartisan guy helping to count Ohio's vote. So what he did is sign these contracts to run the system. The interesting thing that we've just found out in the Free Press is 14 months in advance, going back to July 1st of 2003.
Now, this is 14 months in advance of the 2004 election.
Yeah.
You're talking about Michael Connell, who based in Akron, is that correct?
Yeah, Akron, and, Canton area.
Yes, and so he is the primary IT guy for Bush, Team Bush, Rove, and Cheney. And,
Absolutely. You know, with a long-standing relation to Bush family that goes all the way back to using computers to count the delegates when George Herbert Walker Bush wins the nomination as the Republican candidate in 1988. So it's a long-standing relationship.
So he is the consigliere of the Bush family in the IT world. He's their IT guru.
He's their man to solve their problems.
Okay, and their problem in 2004 is getting
a fair vote count.
And so the problem in 2004 is getting George W. Bush another term. And you're saying that 14 months in advance of the 2004 election,
he signs a contract with J. Kenneth Blackwell, the Ohio Secretary of State, who had worked for George Herbert Walker Bush as the UN Human Rights Ambassador. And they go into great detail. What if the supercomputers in Ohio, owned by the state, Ohio State, all failed on election day? You know, how could you report the vote? So they come up with a scheme that allows them, and we've just found these contracts, you know, years later, to use remote processes to divert Ohio's vote count, vote reporting and count, to Chattanooga, Tennessee, where, thankfully, we can be happy here, Harvey, a former evangelical right-wing preacher, Jeff Averbeck, who ran a far-right evangelical publishing house, will count and process the votes on a server farm in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in the old Pioneer Bank building.
Now, these are the votes from the Ohio election. So, of course, as we know, there are no computers in Ohio that could have counted the votes in Ohio.
Other than the ones they've used and never had problems with.
The vote count shifted to Tennessee.
Yes, to a server farm where the vote is going to be reported from. Now, the interesting thing, they can do this through remote control access. And when the diagram was finally released, again, back in 2008, just prior to Connell's untimely accident in a small airplane. And again, he had been deposed about a month and a half prior to this, the day before the election, and asked about this bizarre scenario of counting Ohio's votes, you know, on a right-wing server farm in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So that became a very interesting part of that, because he dies soon after the diagram comes out, which showed, and this was a GOP computer expert that pointed out that it looks like it was a kingpin. It looks like there was a computer at the Secretary of State's office, or that could be remotely accessed, that could actually switch the vote count.
You're not suggesting that the 2004 election was stolen. All right, never mind.
Well, yeah, no. The
question is,
the exit polls, which are the gold standard, the exit polls ended up going the other way, saying that John Kerry won the election.
Right. Bob, you got some background noise in there. If you could.
Yeah, hang on one second.
Okay, so now what's
happening?
I'm on the
radio,
now, Bob,
so I
Bob
can't
Trakus.
Really.
Okay, what's happening? I knew I shouldn't have called you in a bar.
I'm recovering from the Lions, Harvey. Give me a break.
Well, you got a lot to recuperate. So what's happening now? What is new in the story of Mike O'Connell? Mike O'Connell died right after the 2008 election, having been deposed about the theft of the 2004 election. If anybody knew about on the inside track, it was Mike O'Connell, because by all accounts now he is the one who choreographed the theft of the 2004 election, although he continued to deny it. But why would they kill him, and what is new about what's come out in your new story at Free Press Oil? I should add that Bob Fitrakis is the editor and publisher of www.freepress.org, which publishes my columns as well. But his new piece talks about new evidence in the case of Michael Connell and the theft of the 2004 election. So tell us what has now come out.
Well, the stuff that's come out is, you know, they planned on the computers in Ohio. And the IT guy, the actual state IT guy, said no way would these computers ever fail. It would take like a coordinated attack from the Russians or the Chinese to attempt to bring down Ohio supercomputers that it actually, you know, and they sent him home at 9 o'clock, right? I mean, your listeners need to know that the Ohio vote count in 2004 was essentially run by private contractors, that were all hardcore right-to-lifers, and that the actual state's IT guy was sent home.
Good. And but he was not a hardcore right-to-lifer, I guess.
I don't know what his politics were, but he was a state bureaucrat that had handled every election, you know, for a couple decades, and suddenly they tell him to take election day off. You know, you can go home
right.
It's 9 o'clock. The votes are about to come in. Why don't you go home?
Go watch the Lions game. So, so the guy goes home, and then J. Kenneth Blackwell, the extreme right wing Secretary of State of Ohio,
and co-chair of the Bush-Cheney reelection committee.
Right, co-chair of the state of Ohio's reelection campaign, who has met earlier in the day in Columbus with George W. Bush and Karl Rove.
Yeah, unexpectedly, Rove and Bush fly in to Columbus. It's not on the president's agenda.
Right, did Bush give any public speeches that day in Columbus?
Oh, I think he gave a pep talk to some people that were, you know, making phone calls.
And he probably made use of the Ohio State workout facility to get in his lifting for the day. So
probably went up to the Buckeyes and pumped some iron. No, but they do have him at a call center, a Republican call center, making some calls.
Oh, he had to make the phone calls from Columbus. They couldn't count the votes in Ohio, but he has to make the phone calls from Columbus. That makes a lot of sense. So what now you're saying is that there was a strategy on paper or available in hard copy, laid out more than a year prior to the 2004 election to have the systems do what on election day?
Well, to have the system, to allow remote access to the system to switch the servers from the state of Ohio, Secretary of State's office, to private servers in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
And they did that 14 months in advance of the 2004 election.
Yeah, July 1st, 2003, a contract was signed indicating that remote access, a new, quote, hot configuration with remote access would be built into the system just in case the Ohio site went down.
Oh, my God. We're talking with Bob Trakas, one of America's leading election protection experts, my co-conspirator. What do we got? 5 books out there on the theft of the Ohio election and election
protection.
Yeah, and
we just updated one on corporate vote theft, which includes stuff that was written, last year and in 2012 as well.
So the implications for Michael Connell, one of Michael Connell's family members has come forward. Can you talk about what that's about?
Oh, well, his
about?
Sister's on the record thinking that he was murdered. His wife, off the record, has indicated that she has a variety of questions about what happened to him. But his sister is very straightforward. I mean, what people need to look at is Michael Connell was actually being encouraged by Steve Spoonamore, another IT guy, right? These guys had worked together overseas, working to bring democracy in computers to the third world. Steve Spoonamore, for example, fully supports the attack on Iraq, worked for John McCain. He just draws the line on, rigging elections in the United States. He has a sworn affidavit saying that Connell approached him about how to erase, hard drives and other things permanently. This is when questions were being raised about the 2004 election. Spoonamore said, I don't want any part of this discussion, but really encouraged him to come clean because while he was the architect, there's no real evidence that he pulled the trigger. It looks like that was done by J. Kenneth Blackwell and Jeff Averbeck in Chattanooga. And in fact, Connell, in his last deposition, went out of his way to say that he didn't hire Averbeck. Averbeck, this guy, this partisan right-wing evangelical preacher, was essentially offered to him by J. Kenneth Blackwell, right? If you want this contract, why don't you have this guy provide the servers?
Okay, so, and then Connell, is there any activity in any kind of official law enforcement investigation ongoing into the death of Michael Connell, the man who may have rigged the 2004 presidential election?
Yeah, and again, what it looks like Connell did is set up a system that would allow it to be rigged and essentially worked with people suggested by the Secretary of State. Now, there was a FBI investigation, but it really was quashed by a FBI agent who was fairly close to the Bush family, who said there really isn't anything to this. So right away, it was just dismissed as it always is, conspiracy theory. And then more and more of this data comes out, more information, regarding these contracts signed 14 months in advance to allow remote access to repoint the vote count to Chattanooga, Tennessee. And also at the time of Connell, right before he died, that spring and summer, he was trying to testify before Congress. Spoonamore was trying to help arrange it where he could testify under oath to the committee chaired by John Conyers, the Judiciary Committee. And also, I had personally contacted on behalf of Spoonamore, who was negotiating for Connell to go public, I had contacted Dennis Kucinich, who had agreed in principle to allow, Connell to testify under oath.
So you think that Michael Connell would have come forward and given a sufficient insider evidence that would have made it even more clear than it already is that the 2004 election had been stolen?
Well, I think he would have. I think he was saying stuff, although he was tight-lipped in not being totally forthcoming at his deposition the day before the 2004 election. He was indicating that it wasn't his idea to hire Jeff Averbeck at SmartTech, where the server farm was, and the votes were counted and sent back to Ohio, or to hire the Rapp family, another right-to-life group that did a lot of the county last-second special patches that have been questioned. You know, why was there all these last-second special software patches?
This is in the 2004 election. So bottom line here, Bob Fitrakis, and I'll move to John Kasich in a minute here, but is that someday, well, someday we'll know who killed Michael Connell. And certainly there are people who clearly had a motive to do so. He died at a very inopportune moment for those who were trying to get to the bottom of what happened at the 2004 election. And what's your sense? Who do you think killed him, and how'd they do it?
Well, you know, I don't know. I know who benefited more than anyone else. Karl Rove benefited by the untimely death of Michael Connell. And there was a letter sent to another interesting fact. The summer before he dies December 19th, you know, 5 years ago. But that summer, Cliff Arnebeck, who is the lead attorney in the case going after the fraud in Ohio, wrote a letter to the Attorney General of the United States asking that he be taken into protective custody, that Connell be taken into protective custody and protected because there were credible reports that Karl Rove had made threats against him. So, and then after he died, a letter was sent to Cliff Arnebeck at the Free Press office, essentially somewhat redacted, saying that Connell had been killed as a, quote, NST, a national security threat.
Wow. By whom?
Well, that's that's a question. That was redacted. All it indicated is that he was killed as a national security threat. It did not indicate who killed him. Remember, again, he did work overseas in various, third world countries on election. But I doubt that, that's why he would have been killed. If he was killed, it was for what he knew about the election in Columbus. And he had also set up the email, Rove's email, that was involved in the Valerie Plame scandal, which does have implications for national security, and the firing of the U.S. attorneys, the ones that wouldn't go after Acorn and prosecute Democratic voters. So the Connell had set up email for Karl Rove, in various scandals, reports of 6 million emails missing, as many as 20 million in the three scandals. But again, this was the same computer set up by a system, internet system, where the Valerie Plame missing emails was on. And that also was hosted in Chattanooga, Tennessee, GWB-43. And that was live in the White House on election day.
Amazing. Okay, we're talking with Bob Fitrakis. Astounding stuff. Go to freepress.org, www.freepress.org, to catch up on the latest Bob's intrepid and uniquely powerful reporting. Bob, we are saddled in Ohio with an inheritor of the George W. Bush era. John Kasich. Kasich is one of the right-wing governors in the Midwest, and the theme of Scott Walker in Wisconsin, Rick Snyder in Michigan, Rick Scott in Florida. What's the guy? What are the guy's name is in Pennsylvania? And John Kasich now has recently essentially thrown over 100,000 Ohioans out of work. Can you talk about that a bit and what his modus is here and what he's saying about it?
Oh, the actually what he's done a variety of interesting things, but he threw 134,000 off the what used to be the food stamp program. You know, now they don't actually have these stamps, which, by the way, Harvey, I did get food stamps, actual food stamps, up in my sophomore and junior year in college until Jimmy Carter cut college students off, is that you could actually, if you were below poverty and a student, you used to be able to get food stamps in the 60s and 70s. So the SNAP program.
We all know that you guys just went out and bought marijuana with those food stamps, right?
I mean, well, that's really I can't wrong. Confirm or deny that. It says I'm in Ohio, let me take the fifth.
But so what has Kasich done now? He's all these people, he's thrown them off food stamps, and what's he said about it?
You know, he wants them to go out and get, you know, they're able-bodied, they can go out and get jobs. Now, here's the problem. In Franklin County, which is the capital of Ohio, where Columbus is, the Jobs and Family Services, the state program, which Kasich theoretically administers and is the executive over, said there's no way in the hell they can keep their food stamps if they go out and volunteer, you know, put in all this time and work. And the Jobs and Family Services saying, we don't have enough caseworkers. You know, Kasich has cut the budget to the bone. We don't have people that can even process their paperwork in order to keep track of them volunteering, nor can we come up with the personnel to find placement and oversight for 15,000, you know, workers.
So Kasich, of course, himself is a multimillionaire. He's got a big enough house that he refused to move into the governor's mansion, and mm-hmm. now the state of Ohio has to maintain the governor's mansion and his personal home in Westerville, which is a suburb of Columbus. And this guy made a fortune. Actually, Bob, you know better than anybody how he made his fortune. Tell us how John Kasich got rich.
Oh, yeah. Of course I know better. It was my pension that he helped raid. You know, after he left Congress, you know, as a budget hawk, he did a couple things, one which you're familiar with. He was a commentator, or as you would say, a bloviator, for the Fox News Network, leading to $1 million donation to his campaign from Rupert Murdoch when he ran for governor. But the other thing is he worked for Lehman Brothers, you know, the ones that went belly up for bad investments during the housing bubble. He came to Ohio, works for Lehman Brothers, and talked. They used him to talk the state teachers' pension fund into taking $400 million or so in essentially junk assets from Lehman Brothers. You know, so the teachers could all get rich with these wonderful junk assets from Lehman Brothers that all went belly up. So then when he was governor, he then got to turn around after he got rich, you know, all these commissions, selling this Lehman Brothers garbage into the pension funds. He then turned around and demanded that all the teachers, you know, take drastic cuts in their pensions because their board had made such bad investments.
We're talking with Bob Fitrakis here about Governor John Kasich of Ohio. We're going to segue into fracking and other environmental issues. We've been covering the 2004 stolen election. We're going to take a short break, Bob, about 30 minutes. 3 minutes. You can go back to your friends in the bar.
I've been doing bad, back. We'll talk, so you're we'll taking the rest of the show off.
Clean air, water, rooftop gardens, title geothermal power. Family, community, healthy children, and lots of forest for the bears.
Yes, indeed. Lots of forest for the bears. That's Dana Lyons singing the Rocky Top version of the Soartopia song. We're on for another half hour with Bob Fitrakis, talking to us from Columbus, Ohio, home of the stolen elections, and of now of Governor John Kasich, a potential nominee for the Republican presidential race in 2016. Bob has just explained how this governor has cut food stamps for 130-some thousand Ohioans and encouraged them to go out and volunteer. How's this going over in general, Bob? What's the public reaction been in the Buckeye State?
Well, the directors of all the food pantries have said that, you know, this is absurd. We're already overtaxed. We're already at record amounts of people seeking food assistance. Why would you? And this was free federal money, Harvey. He could have got a waiver from the federal government because the economy is so bad in Ohio, and you know, done this the following year. And again, he only did it. Here's the odd thing: he only did it in 72 counties. So,
what are the is there a distinguishing characteristic of these 72 counties?
They weren't, you know. Appalachia, the big notion is they were all the major urban counties that vote Democratic.
Right. Okay. So now what has been done in Ohio to try and get more jobs for people? What is Kasich's major program? You did mention one thing, by the way, that I do want to recall. You said this is federal money that was available. When he first came into office, Governor Kasich got rid of the $400 million
$400 billion
in the federal government for the reestablishing rail service between Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati. You live in the Central Ohio area. There hasn't been passenger rail service there since 1979. What was the possible motivation for this governor to come in and throw away $400 million in federal money?
It was free federal money. I think he wanted to show that he was a maverick and independent, but it would have been great. We'd have generated a whole lot of jobs, you know, bringing rail service back to the capital city. Again, as you've pointed out many times, what was it, 1979, the last time you could take a train from Columbus to anywhere?
Right, unless you're afraid. That's incomprehensible to me, actually. I've never been able to figure that one out. Kasich is definitely in the running for the Republican nomination for presidency. He's got to first get reelected, and then he'll join Rick Scott Walker and all these other extreme right-wing governors in the Midwest. Bob, you have cast aspersions on the legitimacy of Governor Kasich's initial election to office, implying that there may have been irregularities in the vote count there as there were in 2004 for the presidential election. Tell us a bit about what you think went on when Kasich was originally elected in 2010.
Well, the key thing is the international gold standards for what is a fair election is the exit polls. And again, much like Bush in 2004, the exit polls were indicating that instead of Kasich winning by 3 points, that he lost by 3 points. And again, a lot of this could be essentially Democratic voters being thrown off the voter rolls just spontaneously, or if somebody's programmed it wrong. One of the subcontractors that worked with Connell is the Rapp family, and they've moved heavily into electronic poll books. So there's numerous reports of people, you know, being kept from voting, even though they've lived at the right address because of some, you know, computer programming that says they're not eligible to vote. And there was massive, you know, voter suppression tactics used by the Republican Party and attacks as well upon student voters at the campus area. Although the election was run by Jennifer Bruner, a Democrat, a lot of the county levels and the specific precinct levels saw massive voter repression tactics and numerous complaints of people saying, I was eligible to vote, I've been voting from the same place for 20 years, and now suddenly my name isn't there on the voter polls anymore.
Well, in all fairness, this is going on all over the country. There's been a massive
sure.
and pretty well-publicized attack.
Yeah, but this, the key difference here going on all over is that this is a battleground state, and the exit polls, people coming out indicating that they had voted, you know, the reelection of Governor Strickland.
Right. Who's conducting these exit polls, and what's the future of exit polling? That's a key question in our electoral process in the U.S.
Well, most of the exit polls are done by a media consortium of the major news organizations. Who knows what the future will be? I mean, since George Bush, in both cases, the exit poll showed him losing the presidency, and he won, and his prime operative, of course, Karl Rove, has been spending all his time discrediting the exit polls, which are the most accurate polls that we have. So I think there's a concerted attempt to destroy the exit polls, their validity and their credibility, so that, in fact, things can be done with computers in close elections, can be flipped if you have the right IT guys. Like Mike Connell.
Well, they have to be alive to do it. So we're talking about Bob Fitrakis here, election protection expert and publisher, editor and publisher of the www.freepress.org, and now the Columbus Free Press, which is back on the streets in paper form. We want to move over, Bob. Ohio has also become a target state for fracking. There's quite a bit of it going on in Ohio. My understanding is that fracking has actually caused an earthquake, at least one, in Ohio. And you've done some major investigative reporting on some of the radioactive elements involved with fracking. Can you tell us about that?
Well, yeah, there was a documented earthquake in the Youngstown area. And actually, there's follow-up showing several smaller earthquakes as well, by injecting fracking waste into old oil and gas wells that really weren't designed. They were designed to pump stuff out of them, not to have high pressure injection into them. But part of what's going on, Ohio, for example, in 2012, 6 million gallons of water from Ohio was created through fracking, you know, the fracturing the earth, the horizontal drilling. But actually 8.2 million came in from primarily Pennsylvania and West Virginia. So we're dealing here with 14.2 million gallons of water in the state, and another 11.2 million that was dumped here in 2013, although the year's not over yet. So the broader question is, and in fact, it's not gallons. Let me correct it. It's actual barrels. They're measuring this in barrels, not gallons. So you're bringing in 14.2 million barrels into the state, or generating it in another, again, 11.2 million barrels. And in this water, Harvey, as you well know, because you're going down deep, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 feet, you've got all sorts of chemicals. You got salt. You have toxic material that's used for the fracking. And, of course, because it's, you know, Ohio, you've got radium. In fact, the way they know where the deposits are, they actually test for radium radioactivity, because that's where they can release the gas from. So most people know radium in Ohio through radon gas, which is produced in much the same way. So this radioactivity that's going into this wastewater, and what's going on right now is that the state legislature with the governor's signature, the Republican state legislature, essentially is now saying that all this radium that's down there 2,000-4,000 feet is naturally occurring, and thus it's normal instead of technologically enhanced normal, which is known as T-norm. So since radium is normal down there, that they really can get rid of 90% of all the drill cuttings, right? Everything that is sucked out of the hole, including radioactive muds and rocks, etc., can now be dumped without testing in Ohio's dump sites.
And what are these dump sites? Are they the local landfills? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, essentially, so, yeah, the 39 or so licensed landfills. In fact, it gets even better because they don't have to pay a fee for dumping this radioactive toxic waste, because it's argued that the mud can be used as filler. Hence, it's a asset to Ohio to take this mud and spread it over the landfill, even though it's got toxics and radioactive material in it.
Suburban and urban landfills. These are not high toxic, especially industrial landfills. These are just the stuff where you go.
And they're not even low-level radioactive waste landfills. These are like normal landfills, but they're taking known radioactive material to those landfills.
God, that's terrifying. Yeah, so we're talking about Bob Fitrakis, publisher of the Columbus, Ohio Free Press and www.freepress.org. And they're using, so what they're doing is they're injecting water into the shale, into the substrata of the soil, of the land, going down 2,000-4,000 feet, somehow liberating the gas, which is collected for use in power plants. And then they're sending the toxic radioactive effluent and dumping it onto just regular urban, suburban landfills. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and they're not even paying a fee for that, because they're claiming that all this mud that has been pulled out of the hole is useful for sealing the landfills.
And who is they? Who's doing this work?
Well, this is really coming from the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. The EPA has sort of given up its right to really regulate the fracking waste. And even though there's interesting, the standard for, radium is sort of picocuries. So the health department of the state and the EPA came up with a test showing that the fracking water has, in one case, had 896 picocuries per gram. So just massively higher than allowed, and a tremendous health threat. But essentially, because it's now, quote, naturally occurring, even though you're sucking this this radiation out of the earth from 3,000-4,000 feet down, 90% of that can now go untested. There's no requirement to actually test it. You know, you test the fracking water, but you don't have to test the mud and the rocks and everything else coming out of the hole.
And what companies are doing this? The state's not doing this. Essentially, some private corporations are making big money on this.
Sure, yeah. There's various companies that are just, bringing it down the Ohio River, trucking it in from Pennsylvania and West Virginia. Right, this stuff, they're not allowing it to be buried in Pennsylvania, so they're bringing it into Ohio. And one of the things they say is, well, the landfill guys can, wave a a magic wand over it, a Geiger counter or something. But the problem is that the frack material, the so-called drill cuttings, these mud and pulverized rocks, they're not really, radium isn't, alpha and beta emitter. That it's not a gamma. They said it wasn't a gamma emitter, so the wand itself isn't going to do much good. It's an alpha and beta emitter, but they're not going to do tests to isolate the specific radium as an alpha and beta emitter. So they'll be using essentially a handheld filled Geiger counter instead of the 21-day test that's mandated by the EPA, where you actually isolate the material and then test it after 21 days for alpha and beta radiation.
Right. Now, just to clarify, X-ray and gamma rays, these are energy waves that can penetrate the body. Of course, we use X-rays for medical purposes. X-ray and gamma ray were primarily released at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Alpha is two protons and two neutrons. That's a particle. If it's ingested, and this is the situation with alpha and beta emitters, is if these particulate matters are ingested into the body, they can have a lethal impact in very, very small quantities. Of course, alpha emitters, including plutonium, will go into the lung, and even a single alpha particle is capable of causing lung cancer. We're talking with Bob Fitricus about fracking now, in general and in the state of Ohio. Fracking has become a big part of the economy, the governor, Kasich, and the Republican state legislature are pushing it as hard as they possibly can. We should understand about the state legislature in Ohio that although Ohio is a Democratic state, voted for both Barack Obama and Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown in 2012, the state legislature, due to gerrymandering, is totally and overwhelmingly controlled in both houses by the Republican Party, they managed to sneak in the governor as well in 2010. Is there any hope for Ohio, Bob? What is there any kind of progressive movement? What kind of people's resistance to this overwhelming Republican domination is there in the state?
Well, there's a lot of citizens groups, across political lines that is trying to keep this material out. There's, some progressive Dems that are fighting, to regulate. Part of the problem is, the Green Party was one of the four parties, the minor parties, particularly the Greens, who pushed these issues. They were thrown off the ballot and outlawed another bill.
Yeah,
that
tell
Kasich
us about that.
Signed.
Now, here we have you were the Green Party candidate for governor. You ran with Joe Stein, the Green Party candidate for president. Now, John Kasich, the governor, has come forward and done something. Well, tell us what's happened with the possibility of third-party candidacies in Ohio now.
Well, what happened is the Libertarian Party nominated a former state representative, Charlie Earle, who also has ties to the Tea Party. So he was polling 6% of the vote. He was cutting heavily into Kasich's vote for his reelection in 2014. So on the day that Charlie Earle announced that he's running for governor, that same day a bill was introduced in the state legislature from the Senate, which essentially outlawed all minor parties in Ohio, threw them off the ballot.
Isn't that counter to the Constitution of the United States? I mean, call me naive, but isn't that legal?
Oh, well, that's that'll be decided by a federal judge on January 8th, but all the minor parties are suing, saying that how can you throw us off? In the case of the Green Party, there'd already been a congressional candidate that had filed his petitions for the 2014 election, and he was told they can't be counted because you may not be on the ballot. Also, I mean, the Libertarian and Green Party, as well as the Constitution Party, had been out getting signatures, which becomes very difficult to get signatures when you're not on the ballot.
So you're saying that the premier swing state, Ohio, in the United States of America, has now banned third parties from being on the ballot?
Yeah, for not meeting a standard in 2012, but the standard wasn't in place in 2012. They say, well, you didn't get 2% of the vote in 2012. The question was, we didn't have to get 2% of the vote. So, you know, the Libertarians or the Greens, probably both of them could have gotten 2% of the vote if they would have, because they came very close. The Greens ended up with 1.76% of the vote if the resources would have been counted in a statewide election. So what they did is they set a standard in 2013 and applied it retroactively, like an ex post facto law. They're saying, hey, you didn't get this 2% in 2012. They're going, well, there was no standard to get 2% in 2012. They go, well, there is now. You're off the ballot.
That's astounding. That, of course, could be a national precedent that will allow any state legislature to ban third parties in a statewide election. Is that true?
Yeah, no, it's, well, we'll see what comes out of the federal courts, but it's really hard to believe. You know, it would have been one thing if you would have banned them and said, okay, or said, if you don't meet the standard in 2014, you're going to be banded. You're going to be banned from the ballot. But that's not what they did. They said, hi, we passed a standard for 2012, and even though that election's over and it's 2013, you didn't meet it in 2012 when it didn't exist, so you're off the ballot.
But how could even, with that, how can they set a standard that would ban new third parties from coming in? I mean, if you can't meet a standard from 2012, and you're a new party, how do you get on the ballot at all?
Well, you know, you go out and get, you know, 50,000 signatures.
And then what? But then they can ban you anyway.
Yes, if you don't get 2% of the vote. And not only that, you not only have to get signatures, then all your candidates have to get signatures. So you'll be spending all the year getting signatures in order to allow your people to go out and get signatures. This has been declared unconstitutional already in other states.
This is being heard in what federal court now?
The U.S. District Court, Southern District, Eastern Division of Ohio, in Columbus.
Cincinnati. In Columbus. And yes. Who are the judges?
In this case, Judge Watson, who says he should have a decision by January 8th. In fact, in this case, the Libertarian Party has its own attorney, but the ACLU is representing the Green Party.
That's astonishing. We're talking here at the end here with Bob Fitrakis, just 2 minutes to go. Bob, tell us where people can read your stuff and your latest work. You publisher of the Columbus Free Press and www.freepress.org. You have your own radio show in Columbus. Tell us how people can get a hold of you.
Again, freepress.org is the best site. They can find the Connell article there. Also, they can find the article on fracking. Another site for the daily newspaper, which is for profit, is freepress.com. So I would direct them to freepress.org for the stuff we're talking about. And for further articles, to go to freepress.com and put in my name, Fitrakis. FITRAKIS.
And you teach political science at Columbus State Community College.
I do indeed.
Been with us a long time. Author of what is the title of our latest book?
I know it's corporate vote theft. I had a copy here somewhere. Yeah, we gave it a new updated title, in fact, here it is. I found a copy. Corporate Vote Theft and the Future of American Democracy, revised and expanded to include the 2012 presidential election. Corporate Vote Theft and the Future of American Democracy.
Well, the question is there one? Thanks so much, Bob Fitrakis. This has been another great hour of the Silver Topia Green Power Wellness Show. Join us anytime at the archives of PRN.FM. We're moving ahead, and we're hoping you're coming with us. Thanks again to our crew in New York, and we'll see you again on the radio in Soulertopia.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed.